Lecture 33, Cicero, on Moral Duties, De Officiis.
We come now to the concluding four lectures in our course on great books, books that have made history, books that can change your life. And I want to examine, in these next three lectures, three great individuals, each of whom wrote a great book, each of whom made history, and each of whom lived lives that I think can be patterns to each one of us. So our theme is education. Our theme is, how do we bring out of ourselves, for that is the root meaning of education, to lead out of yourself, how do we bring out of ourselves what is best? What is best for ourselves? What is best for others? And how do we judge what is best? After all, so many of us go through life following false paths, and at the end say, why did we do it? And to begin, I want us to turn our minds back to the year 44 B.C., to Rome. In that same year, as we saw in our study of Julius Caesar, the play by Shakespeare, great Caesar has been assassinated on March the 15th, 44 B.C., on the Ides of March. And his assassins, Brutus and Cassius, and most of the conspirators have had to flee Rome. And Rome is now, in the summer of 44 B.C., in the hands of Mark Antony, much underestimated by the conspirators, regarded as a drunkard and a gambler. He is, in fact, a gambler, and he has played his cards very coolly and has gathered all of Caesar's power into his own hands. Much of the Senate is really afraid, is cowed by the power of Antony and his ruthless exercise of this power. But one elderly man steps forward. He could live out in quiet retirement, honored and respected, but he steps out one more time to speak out for the free republic, to speak out for liberty, knowing that it will very well cost him his life. That man is Marcus Tullius Cicero. Born in 106 B.C., he has, in the year 63 B.C., held the great office of consul at Rome, and boldly and in a determined fashion put down the threat of civil war at Rome. And now, in 44 B.C., he steps forward again, and in a series of ringing orations, attacks the character, the policy, the intentions of Mark Antony. The Philippics, they are called, these powerful orations. And he will fail. Mark Antony will join forces with Caesar's nephew, the man history will know as Augustus, and together they will eliminate all possible opposition to them. They will draw up a list of those who are proscribed, whose names have been written down on this list, and among them are Marcus Tullius Cicero. And in 43 B.C., he will be struck dead, offering his neck forward as the policemen prepare to execute him, saying, strike here and strike hard. In these dangerous last months of his life, starting already in 46 B.C., when Caesar is still alive, Caesar in absolute power, Caesar having offered to Cicero a high post in the new government, wanting to lend the name of Cicero to his new order. Cicero has begun to live very dangerously. He has told Caesar no, and he has gone into retirement, waiting for events. And in that retirement, he has turned himself to the search for truth once again, to philosophy, to the search for what is morally good, so that he can base his politics on what is morally good, in his effort to save freedom at Rome. And in the course of this searching for truth, he writes. And in his writing, he composes what has been called the best book on morality and ethics ever written or that could ever be written. That was what Frederick the Great of Prussia called it. It is his work, De Officiis, his work on moral duties, on obligation, on responsibility. And he wrote it to educate his son. His son, Marcus Tullius Cicero, who at that very time is a college student, studying in Athens, having a junior year abroad where he is studying philosophy. And philosophy was not an arid academic discipline. It was looked upon as the crown of your general education. After you had studied literature, after you had studied how to speak well, then you crowned it all by a year or two or three of studying philosophy. And if you could, as young Cicero could through his father's wealth, you went to Athens and studied under one of the great philosophers. And maybe you visited two or three different universities, learning various schools of philosophical thought, such as the Stoics, with their emphasis upon duty, or the Epicureans, with their emphasis upon pleasure. The good life should be one that is pleasant for you. Or the Cynics, who said you can trust nothing. No knowledge can be absolute. And to his son, at this critical age in his life, a son who already had some problems, he drank much too much. And Cicero, who was a very indulgent father, he never disciplined his son, and in fact gave him a living allowance that in today's currency would probably, translate out to about $40,000 a year, so his son could live in some luxury. Cicero wrote this work and dedicates this to his son and puts it in the form of a letter. My dear son, I want you to make the best of your time in college. I know that you are studying under very fine professors, but I want to lend a bit of help, taking from my own life lessons and hoping that you will learn from what I have done in life, the mistakes I have made, the good things that I have done, and be able to fit a pattern for your life. So at the end of your years, you can say, I did well. I did well. And what do I mean by doing well, my son? I mean that you live a life that gives back to your country, gives back to your family, gives back to your fellow citizens. You have had many great advantages. My father worked hard for me and enabled me to study, enabled me to go to Rome to study, and then enabled me to go to Greece. But I have worked very hard as well. I have worked for my country. I have worked for my family. I made a career as an attorney. And I started out as an attorney to prove that you can be both a successful and wealthy attorney as well as an honest attorney. And I took it upon myself from the very beginning of my legal career to take difficult cases, cases that were dangerous, to stand up for poor people, as well as people in political trouble, and to argue their cases with all my might, no matter how dangerous, no matter how much ill will I incurred. And I made a success of it. And having made a success financially and in the legal profession, I realized that the highest calling is public service. And I went into politics. And there again, I set out to prove that you can be an honest as well as successful politician. And I reached the highest level of public trust. I held the great office of consul, commander-in-chief of Rome, the chief executive office. And in my year of the consulship in 63 BC, an evil faction of men led by Catiline sought to destroy our constitution. And I took the firmest possible stand. Others said you must equivocate. There are many wealthy and influential men on their side, including Caesar, already a rising politician. If you try to stop them too drastically, you will be destroyed. But I put the salvation of my country and its constitution and its liberty first. And I stepped up. I broke that conspiracy. And then on my own authority, I had those men put to death. Yes, I took the responsibility, and for a brief while I was exiled. But the people will ultimately make the right decision if they have the truth, and I was brought back. And when great Caesar triumphed, I stood up against him. He was a man with enormous ability, but he was evil. because he wanted to destroy the liberty of Rome in the sake of his own ambition. So I have tried in my life to follow the moral course. What is that moral course? What are your moral obligations? All morality, my son, is founded upon the idea of natural law. The belief that there is God, and God is revealed in the reason of nature, that the universe is a place of reason, and the whole of the universe, the course of the stars, the course of the seasons, all reveal the hand of God. And God has set up, as Plato tells you, in his great work, The Republic, a set of absolute values. And those absolute values have been defined when you read The Republic of Plato. They are wisdom, justice, courage, and moderation. Believe me, my son, those values, those virtues exist, even if the whole world says they do not. I wish there were a stronger word than virtues. In Latin, it does convey the notion of power, but virtues are not some weak milksop idea. Cardinal virtues, if the English use that term, we first have to ponder what cardinal means, and then we have to ponder what virtue means. The virtues are goodness. They are what is good and what you should do. That is what we mean by wisdom, justice, courage, and moderation. And now, my son, I want to go on and step by step define these for you. Because no idea is worthwhile unless you can prove it. And this is what I want to prove to you. This is what I think is most important for you to understand at this critical age of your life. One, that you can be good as well as successful. And that means you must understand that there is never a dichotomy between morality and expediency. An immoral act, a bad act, can never be helpful to you. It can never be helpful for you to do an injustice. It can never be helpful to you to tell a lie. It can never be helpful to you to cheat someone. That is where Caesar and so many tyrants have gone wrong. They thought that in the need to help their country, as they said, they needed to do unjust acts. That is absolutely wrong, because the next important point to understand is you can never separate what you are as a private person from what you are as a public person. And I tell you again, my son, the highest calling is public duty. What then is justice? What is wisdom? What is courage? What is moderation? And then how do you apply them? Because this is a practical book for you, a work of how to live your life. Wisdom. Wisdom is knowing the truth. And wisdom is the understanding of these values that God has set for all time. And wisdom is knowing how to apply these virtues to your individual life. At the beginning, you will need information. You will need lots of facts. And then, as you go into college, you'll begin to weave these facts into a broader set of knowledge. But none of that is useful unless you go on to use that knowledge to find the good and then to apply the good. Now, in your search for wisdom, be wary of becoming a pedant. Be wary of studying things that really don't amount to anything much. Science, it can be interesting to learn astronomy and the course of the stars. But why study the course of the stars if you don't know what is in your own soul first? So avoid studying things that are insignificant, and avoid just becoming a scholar, retiring from the world to search for truth. That truth is of no point unless you go back into the world. So wisdom is knowing how to apply the good to your life. Justice, my son, and I say this as an attorney, is the most important single quality to possess. You should guide your life by justice. And what is justice? Justice is never doing harm to someone else, either in their person are in their property, never doing harm to someone else. It is, in a sense, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And the very essence of justice is founded in the belief and respect for private property. Now, my son, justice, applying it in the world. What is one of the great faults we make? One of the great faults we make is passive injustice. We all recognize when a Caesar goes out and harms his country, when a Caesar goes out and takes lives. We all recognize it when someone cheats openly, when someone robs you openly. And that's wrong. But no less wrong is to stand by and allow someone else to be wronged. And we do this sometimes because we believe it's in our own self-interest. Don't step up. Here's a person being wronged by their company, let us say, if we want to move up into the 21st century. Somebody who is being fired because they stood up and said the company's policy, let's say, of polluting the air was wrong. And they told the press about it. And now they're being fired on trumped-up charges of embezzlement. Well, you know the person is not an embezzler. You should stand up and say this is wrong. But you don't, because you say, I've got a family to feed. I've got my own needs to take care of. Well, that is a form of wrong just as great as openly harming someone. Or sometimes we're just preoccupied. I've got too many things to do. I couldn't do a good job of standing up for what is right. That, too, is wrong. And what you become when you do that, my son, is a hypocrite. And nothing is worse than a hypocrite. Because a hypocrite, you see, claims to be doing what is just when they are doing what is wrong. Hypocrisy. It is one of the greatest of wrongs. So avoid passive as well as active injustice. And my son, justice can be extended to everyone. Even those who have wronged us require justice. And justice towards those who have wronged you is not to be excessive in your retribution. And as an attorney, you will extend justice to those who you know to be evil. Because every client who comes to you, even those who are guilty, deserve your very best effort. Only the most heinous kind of crime, say parricide, killing your father. There you must just say, you are so evil, I will have nothing to do with you. But the ordinary thief, even the ordinary murderer who kills in a fit of anger, deserves your best efforts. Because always, son, I want to be practical and give you a practical set of guidelines. Part of justice is generosity. Giving away money and your gifts. And there's a practical guide to generosity as well. You should never give more than you are able to give. Never ruin yourself being a donor to your university. You should be willing to give the money in an order of merit, starting out with your family and ending up with those who are outside of your family circle. And you should give it with a sense of, will it truly help? And that brings us to our next aspect of morality. Morality is keeping your word. Fides, that is a noble Latin word. The Romans believed that their very empire is built upon always keeping their word. Trust. A reputation based on fact that you always do what you're going to say you should do. So keep your word. Tell the truth. But once again, we must be practical. And there are times when keeping your word is wrong. Let's say that you have promised your son a new chariot. And yet that son just keeps getting drunk all the time. And you know if you give him that new chariot, it's dangerous. So, if you have to, say it is in your own best interest that I break this promise. Remember Apollo and how he gave his son a chariot? And that son drove it too close and then crashed into the earth? He should have broken that promise. Or what about Agamemnon when we read the Iliad? Do you remember how he had vowed to the gods the most beautiful thing born in 1 year, if that would make the winds blow properly so he could sail to Troy? And then they said, well, the gods came through the soothsayer and said, that is your daughter Iphigenia. He should have broken that promise even to the gods. That brings us then to the question of courage. Because courage is essential to your living a life of justice. You must be willing to stand up for what is right. It is no good whatsoever, Marcus, to know what is just, to have that wisdom, and then be afraid to put it into practice. And I will say this about myself. I have never been afraid to stand up. It has cost me a great deal, but I have never been afraid to stand up, and that is what I want you to remember. Stand up for what is right. But understand as well that wisdom is essential to courage. That is to say, you should know what is right to stand up for. Because being simply brave in the service of an evil is just brutality. It is savagery. So you need wisdom to know what is absolutely just. And when you have that knowledge, then you stand up and fight for it. As I will always do for what I know to be right, the freedom of our country. And the fourth of those qualities of goodness that are set up as an absolute standard by God is moderation. Nothing should be pushed so far that it in itself becomes a wrong. And moderation, my son, is the guide to live your life by. Moderation allows you to know what is right for you. And I want to come now to your choice of a profession, the thing that will guide your whole life, these choices you are making right now as a college student. The first step is to understand, in terms of moderation, what you are capable of. Where do your traits lie? Sometimes people enter an occupation because of inheritance. You might say, my father was an attorney, therefore I should be an attorney. Sometimes they do it because of connections in life. Sometimes they do it on a whim. But step back and say, I want to be an athlete. Am I really a man capable of being an athlete? Do I have the physique? Do I desire the training? No. Step back and say, what am I best suited for? And then make your decision. But the highest calling is always public service. And ask yourself, do I have the qualities that make a good leader for my nation, for this great free republic? And understand what are the qualities of being a good leader. Public service means not being vindictive. What a big mistake it is to be elected and then say, I'm going to go out and punish and pick upon everybody who has stood in my way. And do not go into public service for self-interest, thinking you're going to make a lot of money out of it, or for self-aggrandizement, or for partisanship to reward your friends. Public service should be a noble and pure undertaking. And so done, it is the finest thing you can do with your life. So weigh carefully your qualities. Weigh carefully this quality of moderation that should guide how you live. There's a time to tell jokes and not to tell jokes. There's a time to show off your learning and a time not to. Always act in a moderate fashion. Now, my son, having understood what we might call the theoretical underpinnings of your life, how do we put this into practice? How do we put into practice these qualities of wisdom, justice, courage, and moderation? And how do I prove to you, my boy, that an immoral act can never be expedient? To step back for a moment, how many of you believe that? That an immoral act can never be expedient? How many times as we go through life, as did Cicero, we encounter a situation in which, you know, it is absolutely in our own best interest to lie. Officer, I really wasn't going 80 miles an hour in this 40-mile-an-hour zone. Or, from a student's point of view, my computer broke. That is why I was unable to finish this paper. Or, from an older point of view, my computer broke and that's why I don't have this report ready. Or, it's his fault that the report is not ready, not mine. It is very difficult to see that an immoral act cannot sometimes be expedient. And Cicero puts it in terms that are very much like our own day. He says, what, for example, if you have to sell a house, and you know that house is filled with rats and termites, but it is crucial for you to sell that house? Or what if you know your house, to jump to our own day, is built upon a nuclear waste dump site? And your children are turning green. And their hair is all falling out. But you put up a sign, and this nice couple comes up and says, we'd like to buy that house. It has all the qualities we want, and it is such a good price. And they say, are there any problems with the house? Because we want to move in so fast, we don't see that we need an inspector or anything. We'll just take your word for it. Now, how foolish would such a person be in today's society? And they would have been just as foolish in the first century B.C., but they're going to take your word for it. Or what if you have a car? The transmission is just about to fall out, but you need to get rid of that car. Maybe you've lost your job, and that $3,000 or $4,000 will be the difference between feeding your family or not. Isn't your first duty to your family? And here comes this young, a teenager comes up and says, I really want that car. Oh, wow, it's a hot-looking car. And I want it right now, and I've got the cash. Do you tell that person this transmission is about to fall out? Well, you tell me. You would be a fool by today's standards not to do so. And if that person were foolish enough to take that used car or to buy that house without getting it inspected, they just deserve what they got. It's called caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware. And isn't that a good Latin term anyway? Well, Cicero says, that is absolutely wrong. And he would tell you that a society that assumed that if you were a big enough fool not to get an inspection, you deserved to be taken, that society had serious moral problems. The very need to have an inspection is a statement that you cannot take somebody's word. And don't we go back to say the very essence of justice is keeping your word. So Cicero says, you should say it's a great house, but it sits right on top of a nuclear waste. And if you buy it, your children are going to get sick. Now, that's passive injustice to sit by and do that. What about the Roman who had a big villa in Sicily and he wanted to get rid of it? And he invited one of his friends down, and all of these fishermen, it was set on the seacoast, and all these fishermen kept coming out and catching all these fish. And the senator said, well, I love this place because not only is it a beautiful place, but I get a huge income from these fishermen, a commission. I want to buy it. No, I can't sell it. Oh, please. So he buys it. Turns out, goes out there, first day in his new home, no fishermen are there. Second day, third day, finally goes down to the wharf. And the fishermen say, we never catch any fish out there. It's got something to do with the currents. But you know, your old friend, he paid us to go out there one day, take a lot of fish with us, act like we were catching them. Now, that's active injustice. That's salting it. But both are equally wrong, my son. I want you, my boy, as I bring this to a conclusion, to think about the patterns of the past, about the great men of the past. You take as your model Marcus Atilius Regulus, the Roman senator, who was taken captive by the Carthaginians during our war with them, was sent back to Rome with a message for the Senate that if the Senate would let loose the prisoners, Carthaginian prisoners who were being held, the Carthaginians would exchange prisoners. But you remember it was our Roman way never to exchange prisoners. But to give Regulus an incentive, the Carthaginians told him, if you come back without having worked this deal to release these hostages, we will torture you to death. Regulus went to the Senate, gave them the Carthaginian terms, and then said, you must vote against it. You must say no. We must never negotiate with an enemy while in the field. Then he said, now, I'm glad you voted against it. I am going back to the Carthaginians. And even the Senate said, we release you from your oath. You came home on service of the state. Now you can stay. Think of your family. Think of your country that needs you. And Regulus said, no, I have given my word. And on that word, on that honesty, the whole of our moral structure rests. And so Regulus, my son, went back and was tortured to death. That, my son, is the stern old Roman way. Well, it didn't quite work with the son. Cicero's son grew up to be a drunkard, continued right on that path, sold his services to Augustus, and lent his name to the new order of Augustus. So you can't always make your children come out the right way. But Cicero left us with this enduring statement of moral justice.